Welcome to Real Talk JavaScript, the weekly talk show that brings you stories of real-world development from industry experts and developers like you and me. Each week, Ward Bell, Dan Wallin, Craig Shoemaker, and John Papa find out what it takes to write, deploy, and maintain apps that stand up to the demands of the real world. And now, here are your hosts.
Welcome back to Real Talk JavaScript. This is episode 80, Service Workers with Kayla Fernandez. And today I've got two co-hosts. I have Dan Wallin and Ward Bell. How you doing, fellas?
Peachy.
Excellent.
Peachy, huh?
That was...
You spending some time in Georgia?
Yeah, really. Have you ever been in where everything is Peachtree Lane and there's not a thing, not a peach tree to be found?
It's so true.
Oh my. You guys, our topic today is about service workers. Have you done any applications with service workers, PWAs, progressive web apps?
Well, John, I was just with some service workers yesterday. I do what you often do. I go to my local coffee shop and they serve great coffee there. And what a great place to work. I know you do that. And so I think that service workers don't get the respect they deserve, and they should be tipped a minimum of 20%.
You know, Ward, nobody can see this, but I'm just shaking my head right now through the microphone.
What? We're not talking about that?
So you're saying service workers are basically baristas at Starbucks?
Absolutely. Well, yeah, exactly. You know, I go to my local, beatnik coffee shop.
And
what am I missing? What am I missing?
This is why Dan Wallin is on the show.
Hey, John, it's been fun, but I think this is my last one. I can't take the jokes. No, I'm just kidding.
It's like I have Laurel and Hardy here, or Abbott and Costello with me as co-hosts. I don't know.
I bet.
Well, thank the Lord that we have a guest today. Kayla Fernandez, welcome on the show.
Well, thank you.
And so some folks out there may get to know you a little bit better. Let's read a little bit more about Kayla. Kayla works as a software development consultant at ThoughtWorks with more than 11 years of experience. She's a Google developer expert in web and Angular technologies, and she's also a speaker who believes that sharing knowledge is a way to democratize technology for all. Welcome, Kayla.
Well, thank you so much to invite me.
Yeah, it's great for you to join us here. And I know we all actually met at a conference a couple of months ago. Boy, where
at
was that?
Was
that Las Vegas?
Yeah, Dev Connections. Yep. Angular Mix.
I don't know where I've been anymore. Yeah, that was great. And you did some talks there about, was it RxJS?
Yeah. And the other one, it was about Ivy.
Oh, Ivy, the new Angular compiler. Excellent. And when we were talking, we wanted to do a show about how service workers can be used in applications. And before the show, you had mentioned that you have several use cases where you've used this at your job at ThoughtWorks. So I thank you for coming on here. But I guess to kick things off, it's been a while since we've done a show on service workers. Would you like to explain to our audience what they are?
Yeah, sure. I think there are two aspects related to web applications. And I think we all agree that uncertain and unreliable is the network. So it's not enough that your application work only in the best network circumstances. Because, okay, you have a wonderful Wi-Fi or you don't have no connectivity. But the biggest problem that I see is when you have just what we call as Li-Fi, you know? The users try to access the application. You have like a loading and you cannot see, you cannot interact with the application. Increase the user anxiety. And the user experience is impact how your application working and all connection conditions.
You know, that's a great point. Sorry, just to make sure folks understand Li-Fi. When I first heard the term, I thought it meant light Wi-Fi, but no, it actually means like it's a lie that you have Wi-Fi. It means it kind of comes on and goes off.
L-I-E-Fi?
I don't know how you spell it, but it's a lie.
Yeah, because it's worse than no connectivity. Because when you have no connectivity, it's like you have an answer, it's a no. With Li-Fi, it's like it's fake. It's not working. And service worker is a feature that gives to us developers control over the network, rather than let the networks control you. So that way we can build and deliver wonderful web applications.
Real quick, that's such a big deal, right? Because how many times have you been on the lie network where you're like, yeah, I got an IP address, it should work. And then you can't get to anything. So I agree.
I've been in a keynote where that happened to me.
Oof.
So ServiceWorks, they give for us web developers these superpowers. And they are a specific type of web worker. A web worker is just a background thread for the web, just runs just JavaScript code, but has a separate context from the application and can perform a specific task without slowing down the web page. So service workers are a specific type of web worker, but they have specific events, most of them related to network traffic, like HTTP requests. And they play a proxy role between your app page and the network. So instead, the requests go directly to the network, they pass through to the service worker. And that way can offer rich offline experience, periodic background syncs, push notifications, many features related to native applications. This is only a script that runs in the background in the browser, separate for the web page. And you usually implement features that don't need a web page or user interaction. It's not something new, it's only JavaScript code. So, but give to us developers full control of the network and the cache in a low level access.
So when I've used this in the past, and I haven't done service workers in about a year, to be honest with you, I'm kind of itching to go back to doing it because I haven't had an app I've written that's necessarily needed it. But what I really liked was I could do things like you say, make your app available offline because I can cache all the web pages and even some of the HTTP calls to load some of the data can be cached with a service worker. But what other use cases, like where should people be looking at their apps and saying, you know, a service worker could help me here?
I think in the most applications, because it's not only for when you need the application to work offline, but I think something that excites me about service worker is that you can intercept and handle a network request, managing a cache of responses. So you can support offline experience, but also can support when your user is on Wi-Fi, you have complete control of the user experience. So you can make your application more reliable, more instant application. So it's not only, okay, if you have this requirement, I have to make my application work offline.
And now let's take a break from a word from our sponsor. Hey Ward, you know, I was building an application the other day and I pulled in this really cool UI component, but it brought along a lot of dependencies with it. How do you deal with that?
I don't like that, John. It reminds me that the AG Grid, which is an advanced editable data table that we use in a lot of our enterprise apps because it addresses the complex scenarios we encounter. AG Grid doesn't have any dependencies at all.
Zero dependencies. Well, tell me, why is that good? Like, what is the value of having zero dependencies?
Well, it's wonderful not having to wonder if while I'm pulling that in, I'm also pulling jQuery in or Lodash or who knows what. In part because that's extra stuff coming over the wire. It's extra files that I don't know what they're all about. It means when my client security team has to evaluate this, they're evaluating AG Grid and not everything else that might be slipping in under the covers or something that we have to worry about there.
You know, it's great to see this day and age, you can have a zero dependency library that does something like complex data grid functionality. So all of you out there, do check out AG Grid at their website at ag-grid.com. And we're back.
So I find it I find it seductive, but I worry about the applications that I build about two things.
And me too. I worry about everything.
Well, there you go,
Ward.
John. Yeah,
I don't worry about retirement. John's, but Ward's
going to push me into early retirement. Okay. I worry about your applications too, John. So Gayla, the two things, and I'm sure you're ready to talk about them, are stale data, like when I ask for something and I don't have it in cash. And the other thing is when I need to update, I have to send updates. It has to get back there. And how do I make sure that my stuff gets there and it's synchronized with the back end? I mean, basically, for a lot of my forms over data stuff, if the information doesn't get back there, I'm really worried that it's ever going to get back there. And what assurance can I give the user that their data will be saved? So, that's it. It's like fresh. How do I keep it fresh? And what do I do about updates?
Okay, it's not trivial because we have the superpower, both service worker and the cache storage API. That's the system used by service worker to manage the cache. They have these lower level building blocks and you can have this stale content. That's the reason I recommend to use, for example, Atto as workbox. It's a high level service worker toolkit that can help you to adding offline support to web app, but also have some strategies regarding the caching, like revalidating or get caching first or from network first and configure some caching expiration policies. And I understand it's not so simple. I think for the most, if your application is very simple, that makes sense. But for adding more instantaneity for your application, I think it's a good feature that you can add.
So suppose... Maybe it'll help if we talk concretely. Like, let's imagine a scenario. Like, I'm building an application to manage ordering clown costumes for my presentations, right? And so, people should be able to come and order clothes from me, my clown clothes, so that they can all look funny on stage. Now, I want to take those orders. Right. I'm writing an application to take orders and manage orders. But how do I know when Dan orders a funny shirt from me, and he's doing it offline? What's happening to his order? How are you going to make sure that Dan thinks he ordered the shirt, but how is he going to know that it actually came to me on the server and I'm placing that order? How do you do it?
Like you're asking for an order when you're offline and how you're going to sync data?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Dan thinks he bought a shirt from me.
Yeah, and I want that shirt.
And he wants that shirt, but it's all in his browser, right? It's all sitting in his cache. It never came to me, so he's going to be very disappointed when that shirt doesn't show up.
Yeah, I can share about my experience because we have this kind of feature. I have development an application. We didn't start with the offline feature, and this is something that's great because you can do that incrementally. So it was an important requirement to enable offline access because the user of this application travels a lot. And to engage them to use the app, even inside an airplane, we implemented an offline strategy. And what we did is a React Redux app. It's not working entirely offline yet. We're doing this incrementally. But we cached some requests for the part we are interested in. And the user data is you start using local storage. And in the next feature, we plan to migrate to Redux Persist, which is a library that will get rid of us to sync data manually. So we take these cached responses and mix it with user data and update our app state. So we are adding this, we have a kind of listener. So we know when the user is online and the user is offline. So we tell the user, you're offline now, you can keep going using the system, but make sure to be online for a secure data. So when the user is online, you show a notification that we are seeking the data. And after the data is synchronized, you tell the user, okay, you can go offline again.
So this is really cool. I think in the trade, it's called event sourcing. Every move that Dan is making is stored as an event and a progression. That's what you're doing with Redux. You're just remembering all the actions that were dispatched and holding them and then replaying them later when you can talk to the server. If you didn't use the mechanism I'm describing, he would be sitting there creating the manipulating data, but you wouldn't know how to replay it to the server later so that it looked like he did it later. Isn't that the basic idea? Is you're sort of batching up what he does and holding on to everything that Dan does while he's ordering, but you can't talk to the server yet. So you're holding on to it. And then later when he can connect, you're going to replay the things he did in the order he did them. Is that the idea?
I'm going to send, for example, in this application I created, the user can add many data, and I'm going to save this to local storage. As soon as the user is online, I call the internet, I call the endpoint, and I save the data in my database.
But are you actually saving it in a local database on the client? Or okay, so you're not using event sourcing. You're actually creating a mini database in the browser?
Yeah, I'm just for the user data. But for the rest of the data, like my images, JavaScript file, for my cache responses, I'm just putting that separated. And that's a good thing using Service Worker, because all these cache things that you can have is totally separated from my application logic.
Okay. I thought you were doing something different, but that could work.
Now, can I ask Kayla, so have you heard of anyone using like IndexedDB or anything like that locally? I know local storage is an option, but local storage is, you know, pretty much a blob dump, I guess you could say. Whereas I could potentially see, integration with a service worker with, say, IndexedDB. And now if I'm offline, because I want to get the clown shirt that Ward is selling, because I'm sure it's going to be cool. That order could go into the local storage. And then once I have network connectivity again, I guess you'd have some script that could pull it out of there and put it back. So have you seen people doing that at all? Or have you used that at all?
What I read about that I want to implement is use Redux to persist. That makes sense for my application because we're using Redux. So what it does, it saves the state of the application and it takes care to do synchronizations, whatever needs. Because I'm doing that right now manually, and I know this is not the best approach for now.
Yeah. Okay. So it sounds like if you use one of these libraries or something, I mean, who knows? They could be using local storage. They could be using IndexedDB or what's the other one, guys, that I'm trying to remember? Ward and John. You got IndexedDB.
Oracle in the browser?
Oracle in the browser. That's the one.
You know, it's a small download.
Can you imagine?
It's a Docker image embedded inside of a Chrome extension.
Oh, man.
I'm kidding, by the way, for anybody who's Googling this.
I can't remember. I think there's another one, though, right? IndexedDB, of course, OracleDB. No, we're kidding. But anyway, it sounds like, Kayla, that if you use one of these other libraries, they can help you with that. So, okay, that's kind of what I was
thinking. Are you thinking of SQLite, Dan?
No. I thought there was another API for a browser. IndexedDB, I think, gets the most press, but there's another one too, but I can't remember the name.
So yeah. Help me. Is IndexedDB everywhere now? Because I lost track. And at one point it was in some browsers and not others, but is it now in every modern?
Let me.
Every modern browser?
You know how I answer that question?
How do you do that, Dan?
Can I use .com?
Oh, exactly. Okay. And stare, everybody. Count of three. One, two, three.
IndexedDB, I got it. I got it. There's a lot of green. A lot of green. Here, I'll just because we talked about it, I'll put it in the show notes and there you go.
Yeah, it looks like unless you're using old IE versions or Opera Mini, you're pretty good with IndexedDB these days. Although there's IndexedDB 2.0, which has a bunch of new features in it, and that is also the same state, basically. IE and Opera Mini are the ones that don't support it, but for those of you who don't know, IE has been replaced with Edge. So if you're using a Microsoft browser, Edge is the way to go.
And IndexedDB is, if I recall correctly, God, you can see how far out I am. That's sort of a key value store, isn't it?
Dude, you're far out.
I am so far out. Is that, that's a key value store, right?
Yes.
That, you've got that a, one a you client can side. Do tables.
Yep. So you can do tables with keys. You can index them. You can write queries. Gives you a bunch of features. You can have stores in there, binary keys. There's like APIs like get all. There's a whole bunch of stuff in it.
But Oracle DB, just because I know you all want to know, can I use it? Gave me an ad for some host called Bluehost. That's what Oracle DB support is.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've stepped
zero results.
We've thrown a curve at her, but you know, so many of us are writing line of business applications that implement either stores or something equivalent like that, and so our big concern is how we want to make sure we're not just presenting stuff to a user. We want to make sure we collect the user's saves and stuff like that, and we make sure that they get where they need to go. And is that the kind of application you're mostly targeting? Is an application that takes and saves user's input?
What do you mean save the user input?
You know, puts it like an order entry or an airline reservation or a restaurant reservation, anything where you're collecting information from the user and then you have to save that information to the server eventually.
Yeah, I think this is a kind of implementation that depends what the architecture that you have, because this is kind of user data. It's not where the service work touches. The service work touch more all the assets, all the critical files and things that the application needs to load. But the user data depends on the architecture that you have in the application. I think these strategies are strictly related, because I'm using Redux, I can use Redux Persist, and I can do this because this type of synchronization uses those libraries. But if you're using like another state management, it should be different.
Okay, so you've made a really interesting distinction. You've distinguished the application itself and how Service Worker can help with the application and its assets versus the user data. Is that the basic divide, or is there another category of stuff that you would do in a Service Worker?
No, it's the basic how they work. For example, I'm using Workbox. So what Workbox does for me is I can write my service work by my own. I have a file, JavaScript file. When I configure all the assets, including JavaScript, images, endpoints that I want to cache, and Workbox has a tool integrated with Webpack. So I'm using Webpack. I'm using Workbox Webpack plugin. So what it does, I'm using in a inject manifest mode that gets all the output files from my build and create an app shell model that references all these output files, include, for example, hashes that I can put on my files. Because in real world applications, we're not I don't recommend to write Service Worker without these integrations with your build. So what it does is now I have this Service Worker running on my browser, and it's gonna to cache all these things related to my application, but separated, because the Service Worker don't have access, for example, to the DOM. So it's a separate context from application.
Can I ask real quick, Kayla? So you mentioned the word app shell. Can you describe what you mean by app shell earlier?
Yeah. Shell, it's like the minimal HTML, CSS, JavaScript, everything that needs to, for example, load some page in your application. And it's like the skeleton of the UI. So has the components necessary to get your app off the ground, but they have no data. And you can configure in the app shell model some HOUT. And when the user accesses that HOUT, you're going to handle some portion of HTML. And this is wonderful, for example, to instantaneity, reliability, give a performance, because when the user, for example, access some how-to new application, we can decrease the FMP, you know, first meaningful paint, is the moment when the user starts to see something in the screen. So if you have this AppShell model, you can show quickly some information to the user. If you have a single page application, the shell architecture is straightforward to implement because we handle some navigation requests related to some specific URL, but you can cache the generic shell of some HTML document. So a shell is everything you need to bootstrap your single page application.
Okay, I like how you explained it. You said it's kind of like a UI skeleton, and then obviously the service worker can go and pull from cache or whatever to fill in the emptiness, if you will, add some muscles and whatever else it needs, needs to be on the skeleton.
And it sounds like what that really solves for the user of the app, because that's who we're building these things for, is if the app is loading and things are taking time to come up, at least the app shell is the first thing they're always going to get that thing by having this app shell separated out and loaded inside the application, right?
Yeah, and it's important when you start creating an application that wants to work offline, you have well-defined offline strategy. So have to know what you want to load, when you want to load. And there is a tip, for example, just look at inside the developer tools, for example, the Chrome and the network tab. You know, you can see all the assets that are loaded. You can check the name and the type columns and the waterfall model, you know, you can go there and see, for example, you're loading a API HTML. So you can see the extension and can confirm in the type, okay, it's a document. Or is an asset, or is a style sheet. And if you look at the waterfall column, starting the top and working your way down, you can see the length of each bar. And this represents the amount of time that was spent loading each resource. And you can use this to create your offline strategy, because the first request is always a HTML document. And all the next requests will flow like a waterfall, load images, scripts, styles, and you can use this to understand how your application is loaded and why you need to load, when you need to load, when you need to cache.
Kayla, you've made some really good points here, and I want to make sure everybody groxies here, because what you really keep referring to, even though we're talking about how these service workers work, is you keep going back to the Chrome developer tools in the browser and how they're such an essential tool for debugging service workers and progressive web apps. Let's take a quick break from a word from our sponsor.
Are you building a web application? Need to deliver it soon and don't have the people to do it? Maybe you're not sure your company has the skill set or experience to do it. And maybe we can help. I'm your host, Ward Bell, and my day job is building applications for companies like yours. I don't do it alone. I'm president of IdeaBlade, a consultancy that specializes in enterprise web application development. We're particularly strong in Angular, RxJS, NGRX Redux on the front end, and .NET and Microsoft technologies on the server. We're a small, tight-knit group of people handpicked by me for their expertise, experience, integrity, and team spirit. Maybe we can help you with architectural guidance and hands-on development. And if there's something we don't know, and in our field, really, there's too much to know, we can draw on our personal connections in the Microsoft RD, MVP, and Google GDE networks, as well as our international circle of really great developers, people we know and trust personally. If you got a project that's keeping you up at night, shoot us an email at info@ideablade.com. That's info@ideablade.com. And now back to the show.
And we're back. And what I was hoping, Kayla, you could help everybody understand is when you're inside the Chrome developer tools, where do you generally look for when you're working with service workers? You mentioned the network tab, for example, but where, like if I'm trying to fix my service worker or to see what it's doing, what kind of things do you do inside those tools?
I inspect the application tab because I can see the service worker life cycle. Because when you're the first thing you have to do to install service worker is add at some point in your application call a register method. So you put the place your service worker is registered. So you can see inside the application tab an option called service worker. And as long as your service worker installed and running, you can see the version of your service worker. And every time you update your service worker, it's going to generate a new ID. And you can also click on the service worker link, name, file name, and you can see the content of the JavaScript code.
Yeah, so we go to the application, we open the developer tools, we go to the application tab, and then under application, there's a section called service workers. And like I'm looking at mine right now, and I see a whole bunch of service workers that must be from sites that I have frequented here. Wow, there's a lot of people using service workers, and I don't even know what some of these sites are. Code Sandbox, there we go. That makes sense. We had some folks on talking about that a couple months ago. So that makes sense because then you can test them. It looks like you can also see messages that you can push. I assume that's for push notifications, Kayla. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. I don't have experience using service worker with push notifications. I know that since they cannot access the DOM, but they using behind the scenes a post message API to connect it with the window object. But I have more experience just using for cache storage.
That's been most of my experience too with service workers is the caching and the storage, and then just doing a lot of the debugging. Where I find these tools really helpful is that you can unload, you can force your service worker to unload, because a lot of times without that, it becomes very painful to debug these service workers because you don't know if it's the old version or the new version in your browser. So I'm glad you brought up these debugging tools.
You're right. There's an incredible number of service workers here, and I don't know where they're coming from. That makes me worried. Do I have to worry about these?
I don't know. Depends. No, because the service worker, they...
Be very afraid, Ward. Be very afraid.
I'm very afraid.
They have like a security configuration. So CC, you can change the response about some requests. For security reasons, so... if using your service worker in your application in production, you have to have configured HTTPS in your web server. So they have kind of security.
Yeah, and that's something that I think is nice to have because as Ward and John just mentioned, I just looked at a few as well, and you're right, there's way more than I imagined. Of sites that are using it, but it makes sense.
Yeah, because... there's nothing like seeing 7zcsq
going in your dev tools. It makes sense though, yeah, because for so many of these sites, once you've loaded that site once, I would argue the main shell isn't really changing. Now the data may change, but if they're caching some of that locally, at least you have an app you can get back to and maybe explore. And then, of course, once the Li-Fi turns into a, what do we call the new ones? The honest Wi-Fi? We have the Li Wi-Fi and the H Wi-Fi, I guess.
Is that Hi-Fi? Like you get high
there
on
you
Wi-Fi?
Go, Hi-Fi. Yeah. It's the honorary, the honest Wi-Fi. Because I'm thinking, John and Ward, you've seen, I don't have this in there currently, but the lab app you guys have seen, that's kind of a good use case, I'm thinking, because... Once you pull down a course, you pretty much could just keep working with that forever, even if the network goes down, and that could be cached.
You're talking about, so, you have this tool that lets people do labs inside of your instructor-led teaching courses, right?
Right. So that would probably be a really good use case for that.
I know what Dan's doing tonight, Kayla.
I got one here that's the title is John Papa Wants Your Password. And that's the one I don't know if I should be worried about that.
I've already got your passwords.
I just want to come back to a point that you said, John, about update your service worker. And because, yes. Okay, we have your service worker running in your browser, and now you need to update your service worker. And how the browser does that is, okay, if it's a byte difference, it considers it new. It's gonna to read along the script file in the background. It's gonna to start the install step, but the old service worker is going to still control in the current page. And the new service worker enter in a waiting state. So when open pages, tabs are closed, after all they are closed, the old service worker will be killed, and just now the new service worker will take control. And after it take control, it start the activate event, and we can, for example, do some cache management. And this kind of this life cycle from service worker for me is very complex, but makes sense because it's enable many features. For example, your application works offline first. And a concern about not disrupting the current one, and ensure that the scope of the page is controlled by the same service worker, and you don't have many versions. For example, you can have two tabs in your application running. Imagine if you have two different versions of service worker, and you are dealing with the cache. And can get errors, or worse, it can lose some data.
That wouldn't be good. I know that my biggest frustration with service workers and the apps that I have built with them, because I really find them fascinating and I love them in applications. And even if you're not going mobile or offline, I find them to be helpful. For quick examples, a side note is the Angular documentation. So the angular.io website is run with a service worker, which is great if I'm on an airplane and I can't get to what I need to get to when I'm coding up there, which I like to do. But my biggest frustration with service workers is when I'm creating one, just making sure I remember to go into the dev tools and to make sure I update and refresh and force that to get into play.
So to wrap things up, Kayla, can you tell us more about when it comes to, you talked about the shell and the skeleton and all that, but when I go to get these files, say, could be an image, it sounds like, or a JavaScript file. How does HTTP and caching actually work there? Can you give us a little more detail?
Yeah. At least have some roles in your web server. The ideal world, you have total control of the configuration that you put in your request and the response. And for example, you have to take care about if you're adding version URL to the cache storage API use service worker. So the browser void to do an additional network request. So if you have some error in your cache control header, and you can get some stale content to the cache storage API. So what I recommend is for that files that you have kind of fingerprint, have hashes in their file name. You can put like the maximum size age for this cache in your HTTP cache. But for the ones you don't have, because we don't put, I don't put hashes on my HTML files. So that case, you can have no cache. And this is very important because if you don't have this configuration, that way you can have the stale content.
Okay. So you can kind of control, it sounds like, what's kept around longer versus what's fresh every time. And you have more control over that, it sounds like.
Yeah. And since I'm using Workbox, they take care of this for me in some point because we have two types of caches using Workbox. We have the pre-cache files. So the pre-cache is the critical assets. For example, I have my bundle there, I have my index template there, but for the all cache values, for example, everything that comes for the user interaction, the requests, they're in a separate cache called runtime. And for this pre-cache, I want to make sure I'm use the last version, and Workbox helped me because it adds on my cache a call like a revision number. So every time I pull a new version from my front change, they send me a new revision number. So that way I can keep these values updated.
Excellent. Hey, Kayla, thank you so much for coming onto the show today and sharing with us about progressive web apps and service workers. And to wrap up the show, we'd like to have a section called Our Final Thoughts. And this is the part where we lay down our thoughts to anybody who's listening out there. And I'll start with Mr. Dan Wallin. What's your final thoughts, Dan?
My final thought. So I've been doing an interesting experiment over the last couple of weeks. A lot of the companies that I work with, our company works with, are trying to get off of IE10, IE11 and move to Edge. And Edge actually has some features where you have backward compatibility with some of the IE stuff. And of course, Edge is Chromium based now, which is awesome. So I've kind of forced myself. I defaulted Edge on my Mac and Windows machines over the last probably about 2 weeks. So I've kind of forced, because I'm Chrome pretty much exclusively because of the reason we've talked about. And, you know, to be honest, it's been phenomenal. There's been a few minor dev tool little glitches here and there I've seen, but it's been great. So the reason I mentioned that is if your company is currently trying to get off of, I'm working with a big cable company this week. They're trying to get off. They finally got on IE11. And I'm like, ooh, okay. Yeah, exactly. And then they're trying to get off that. So definitely something I think as a developer, you kind of owe it to yourself to start looking at that because you might be able to help get off of that old crap. Am I allowed to use that word, John, on the show? Is that too bad?
Old? That's okay, yeah.
Old's okay? Okay, yeah. All right, excellent. Yeah. Anyway, that old stuff. And something to check out. So it's been surprisingly good. So
I call far. It vintage. That's a vintage browser. It sounds so much,
you know. There you go. There you go. You're more politically correct, though. So that's very good. I like that.
And Mr. Bell, what is your final thought?
We all love clickbait. And the kind of clickbait that I go for is the mistakes that junior whatever developers make. I'm always curious what mistakes they make and whether I'm...
This sounds like a relevant experience you've had recently.
I'm, you know, I'm always wondering if I'm making junior developer mistakes. I go click this thing and I read one just now and I put it in the show notes. Mistakes junior React developers make. And I say, I'm not going to make any of those. So I read through them and I direct DOM manipulation. I get it. Don't do it. There's one at the end, number four. And I'm curious what everybody else thinks. It says a mistake junior developers make is not understanding Webpack. Now, I don't understand Webpack. Is this like, do you guys think that's a junior developer thing or is that a React thing or what?
I don't feel like everybody I run in circles with understands Webpack more so than, or even wants to, quite frankly, other than I have my build working the way I wanted to. Let me just not touch
that. I can barely pronounce it. So there you go. Okay. Just wondered. Anyway, it's a good,
we should get somebody on the show.
I think we could because I want to know how many of us are junior developers. I guess I'm a junior developer and I am glad to be one. Anyway, I thought it was a pretty good article.
Awesome. Yeah. Definitely include the notes, please. Kayla, what is your final thought for our listeners?
I'd like to invite you, everybody to join, if possible, the Dev Intersection conference. I'll be there talking about offline. And this is a kind of different about from this podcast because now I'm going to talk about how I'm going to make it consistent, this data that the user have and some strategies to synchronization. And also I'm talking about Angular and CSS best practices. It would be in Orlando, Florida in April 6 and 7.
Awesome. I just put a link in the show notes for that as well. And my final thought is in the show notes now, we talked about service workers quite a bit. And I wanted to clarify one thing in my head and hopefully that some of our listeners may have on service workers. So we hear service workers and progressive web apps. Service worker, in my opinion, is like 90% of what a progressive web app has under the covers. It's not, a progressive web app has other things in there, like a manifest or app shell. But the service worker is really the brains behind it, if you will. And we did a show, I think it was one of our very first shows, Ward, with Maxim Salnikov on Progressive Web Apps over a year ago, like almost 2 years ago. So you can always go back and reference that as a great reference too. But the really cool thing here is, Kayla, you kept on mentioning service workers and Workbox. And Workbox is a tool that helps write service workers for any JavaScript app, correct?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, so you could be doing Vue, React, Angular, Svelte, Backbone,
vanilla,
Knockout, whatever
vanilla,
you want.
Yeah,
vanilla JavaScript, anything you're doing in the browser, Workbox works great. But what if you're doing, if you're only working in Angular, only working React, only working Vue or Svelte, what you can do is I put some links into all four of those into the show notes on how you can use the CLI tools for Angular, React, and Vue to generate a service worker. And then in Svelte, how the documentation helps you get up and running with the service worker. So you don't have to use Workbox if you only live in one of those technologies, because what they do is they actually bake into their CLIs, their or create React app for React, a starting point for service workers. So definitely check that out, everybody. And once again, everybody, thank you so much for coming on to our show and listening to us pontificate and talk about some pretty cool technologies out here. And this is the end of another week of Real Talk JavaScript. Thank you, and you'll hear from us every Tuesday morning.
Keeping it real.
Thanks for listening to Real Talk JavaScript. This show and all of our shows are available at www.realtalkjs.com with links and notes. John and Ward would love to hear what you think, especially about potential guests and topics for future shows. Follow and send them a message on Twitter at realtalkjs.